Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. In a year where every state tax credit or economic incentive is under intense scrutiny by the legislature, from the state earned income tax credit for the state's poorest families to oil and gas incentives that have been considered untouchable for years, historic preservationists now have a new weapon at their disposal in defending the Oklahoma Historic Rehabilitation Tax Credit. A new study looks at this economic impact of the historic tax credits. Commissioned by the Tulsa Foundation for Architecture, the study has found that the credit has attracted over $520 million in investments and created over 3,000 jobs across the state. And while Tulsa and Oklahoma City have benefited most, 18 counties across the state and towns like Anadarko, Bristow, Sulphur, and Omogee have also revitalized important historic structures and now have new economic activity in them. Any Tulsan who's spent time downtown can also see the impact of the conversion of these old buildings, the Mayo Hotel, the Atlas Life Building, Phil Tower, the Coliseum Apartments, the Tribune Lofts, the Philbrook Downtown, and the Woody Guthrie Center, just to name a few. Well, my guest today is the principal who conducted the study. Donovan Ripkema is the principal of Place Economics, an economic development consulting firm specializing in historic preservation as well as neighborhood and commercial redevelopment. And Amanda DeCourt is the executive director of the Tulsa Foundation for Architecture. They'll be presenting their findings on the economic impact of the historic preservation tax credits tonight, but they join us today to talk about the tax credit today on Studio Tulsa. Amanda DeCourt and Donovan Ripkema, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Rich, for having us.
Amanda, let me start with you. What brought about this study looking at the economic impact of the historic preservation tax credit here in the state?
Well, we know, we see firsthand all the time how important this historic tax credit for rehabilitation of old buildings is to our local economy. And we know that it's important across the state, but we really wanted to have the numbers to back that up and to be able to demonstrate with data that this incentive does exactly what it's supposed to do, what it was designed to do. It is, in fact, a fiscally responsible way for the state to spend its money, spend our money to help bring these old vacant buildings back to life. So we decided, you know, it's time to do a statewide study on the economic impact of the credits.
I assume it's also somewhat in reaction to the rhetoric coming from the Capitol over the last few years.
Every year we find ourselves defending the state historic tax credit for rehabilitation. We just decided it was time to gather all the facts and take a hard look at them so that we have more information when we discuss this with policymakers.
Now, Donovan Ripkema, you've been studying this for a long time, and you can find speeches online going back a decade or more where you say, you know, this does have a positive impact on every economy, and the fact that when you're looking at revitalization of a neighborhood or community district, if you ignore historic preservation, it almost dooms the project for failure. How did you go about setting up this study?
Well, Amanda and Jennifer Gates at the Tulsa Preservation Commission kind of asked us to come and look at this, and it was a great opportunity for us. And we'd had specific assignments like this before, specifically on the state historic tax credit. So we knew what we were doing. What we didn't know before we came here was really how extraordinarily effective, efficient, fiscally responsible the Oklahoma tax credit is.
Compared to other states?
Compared to other states, certainly compared to states that don't have one, but even particularly compared to other states that have state tax credits for lots of reasons we can talk about, but it really is a very effective, efficient tool. In Oklahoma, the tax credits are a saleable commodity. That is, if I do a $1 million project, I get $200,000 in state tax credits, a 20% tax credit. But maybe I'm a developer that doesn't need the tax credits. Maybe it's more important for me to have cash equity into my project than those tax savings. So I can literally come to you and say, you have a tax liability and I will sell you my tax credits. And you give me cash in exchange for the tax credits. You use then the credits against your income tax liability. But what's happening is, in this is true in some other states, but usually they're heavily discounted. People are getting 65 or 70 cents on the dollar for the tax credits. Here in Oklahoma, and we were really surprised when we came down here, people are getting 80, 85, 90 cents, 92 cents on the dollar, meaning it's a very effective tool for raising equity. And as a public policy, it really means that what the legislature intended to happen when they enacted this really is happening.
So let me understand that transferable, that's sort of controversial in many other tax credits. I know, like, there was a coal producer's tax credit where those tax credits are – they're basically sold to offset tax liabilities. Why does this make this efficient, and what's the state benefit of having that?
Well, two different questions, and both of them good. The reason it helps the project is it gets the cash into the project where the cash is needed. From a public policy standpoint, it's getting 90 or 92 cents of that money into the project. It really is affecting the intent of the legislature when they passed it. So it's not like some scam that we're passing off to some, you know, Bill Gates something. It really is saying there's a tax liability here, and the state's indifferent. I mean, the state says we're willing to give $200,000 of tax credits. So very smart developers, large and small in Oklahoma, who don't, for a variety of reasons, maybe need the credits themselves, are just using that as a leverage. What that does from a real estate standpoint, it reduces the debt that the project has to have. By reducing the debt, it makes the project more feasible, more likely to stand the test of time, and mitigates the risk of the whole side of it.
Well, from the state revenue standpoint, does it put the project in the black quicker so that you're recouping tax dollars down the road quicker from an investment?
That's absolutely right. In fact, because you don't get the credit until the project is done, I have to spend all the money and do the building before I'm entitled to the tax credit. But while I'm doing that work, in fact, I'm paying taxes. You're the plumber. I pay you on Friday, but I send your share of your income tax to the state. I buy two-by-fours on Monday, and I pay the sales tax that the lumberyard sends to the state. We figured out that before the state even awards the tax credit, they get about 54 cents of the tax credit back in taxes that the project has generated. So it's a really not just a good return, but an early return to a state that's struggling on how to pay its bills.
Yeah. Now, I know you've also done a lot of work on the impact of historic preservation, adaptive reuse of old buildings. And you talk about the economic impact, but from an environmental impact and the sustainability, just the destruction of one building does tons and tons of recycling efforts and sort of conservation efforts in other areas.
It does. We made the calculation just to kind of give people an understanding of what it means. But take one small downtown commercial building in Tulsa. It's 25 feet wide. It's mid-block. It's two stories high, and it's 110 feet deep. It's not a landmark. The world won't end if somebody tears it down. But you tear down that building and throw it away, that has the same impact, that wipes out the positive impact on the landfill of the last 1,377,000 aluminum cans that people diligently recycled.
That's a great statistic. Well, let's get back to this particular study. One of the things I know the Foundation for Architecture wanted to do, along with the Preservation Commission, was not only gauge the impact here on Tulsa, but the state as a whole, because I think one of the criticisms of it has been it's something that would have occurred anyway where you have historic redevelopment in Oklahoma City and Tulsa. What did you find?
Well, a couple things, both what's happened already and what is on the cusp of happening. About half of all the projects done with the tax credits over the last 15 years, just short of half, were done in Oklahoma City, about a third in Tulsa, the rest in the rest of the state. Although 18 different counties have had historic preservation projects, so not at all is it just Oklahoma City-Tulsa thing. Furthermore, part of the study that Amanda arranged us great interviews with a whole bunch of developers, both here in Tulsa and in Oklahoma City. And here's what we heard, not as a one-off, but with regularity. They said, you know, we've learned how this thing works. We've kind of gotten our cadre of consultants, architects, engineers who know how to do this. We're kind of get how this works. And so we're aggressively looking for projects in Ardmore, in Bartlett, in Ada, in Lawton, looking around the state. And you can really see that kind of pattern of that drifting out. So not only has it been lots more than just Oklahoma City and Tulsa, but that's a pattern that really is on the geometric growth curve.
So what was the overall bottom line finding on this tax credit? Amanda, you know the state very well. So what has been the bottom line?
The bottom line is that it works. It does its job, and it does it very well. And most of these projects would not happen without the existence of this incentive.
It's about $500 million worth of investment, correct?
In fact, that's another interesting thing about Oklahoma is that the total investment in these projects, yes, of $515 million, but only about 80% of that was actually awarded tax credits, because in a number of these projects, there were new additions, for example, that were part of the same project, but the new addition is not qualified for the tax credit. There was other kinds of expenditures. So in the end, you think about a tax credit, so it's 20%, so the state's putting up $1 for $4 of the private sector. That wasn't it at all. That when we track these dollars through, every dollar that the taxpayers of Oklahoma put into tax credits, in fact, about $11.74 was generated on economic activity inside the state of Oklahoma. So it's forget it's about preservation. It's an extraordinarily powerful economic development tool.
Of course, it's not bad for preservation either.
No, it's a good thing for preservation. But, you know, we've always said that preservation is an economic development tool. It's not a luxury. It's not something that's nice to have. It's essential to turning around downtowns, large and small. We talk about the Mayo Hotel in Tulsa. I had an interesting conversation yesterday about an old building in Guymon and the mayor of Guymon being over the moon because they've had this giant white elephant building in this tiny town way out on the panhandle that they would not have been able to do anything with if they didn't have this incentive available. And now it's senior housing. It's a great benefit to their community, and it would still be full of pigeons.
Yeah.
If we didn't have this.
And I think when you go around to the small towns of Oklahoma, in virtually every decent-sized Oklahoma town, especially a lot of the towns that had oil at one point, like Bahuska, Cushing, there are these incredible structures that were built probably 80 years ago. Mm-hmm. Most of them are a lot of them are still sitting vacant.
Still sit vacant.
And you know, if that had some sort of adaptive reuse and that sort of economic benefit, it would be a major boon for every one of those communities.
And, Rich, that's actually happening. I know off the top of my head, Tulsa area developers and other developers across the state are working right now. Just off the top of my head, Pawhuska, Okmulgee, I've had phone calls from Grove, from Claremore. These are just the ones that are within easy driving distance of Tulsa. Okmulgee is doing amazing things in their downtown.
And there's another kind of public policy side from that, is that for 25 years, Oklahoma has had one of the best state Main Street programs in the country. So you have here this public policy initiative. We want to help Oklahoma's small downtowns. And you have this historic tax credit, two different things. But the way that you're fiscally responsible is when you layer the activities that government decides to be in so that one reinforces the other. So this historic tax credit is absolutely reinforcing on this side for the whole Main Street revitalization that's going on the other side.
My guests today are Donovan Ripkema. He is the principal of Place Economics, an economic development consulting firm specializing in historic preservation as well as neighborhood and commercial redevelopment, and Amanda DeCourt, the executive director of the Tulsa Foundation for Architecture. The Foundation for Architecture commissioned Ripkema's firm, along with the Tulsa Preservation Commission, to study the economic impact of the historic preservation tax credits. They'll be presenting the findings this evening in an education series program from the Tulsa Preservation Commission, and they're our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Donovan, if I can ask you for a moment, I know you've done a lot of study on the impact of historic preservation in revitalizing, say, commercial districts or downtowns. And I was struck by something you said. You know, when you look at the history of redevelopment, big major city redevelopments, and, you know, anytime you ignore the historic preservation, when you knock down all the buildings and build something new, that just increases the chance of failure radically. I forget the exact nature of your quote, but can you give us a sense of why historic preservation is so important to revitalization efforts?
Well, lots of reasons, but I'll give you, I think, the two major ones. One is that today we live in a, like it or not, we live in a globalized world. And cities are, you know, Oklahoma City is not the only competitor of Tulsa. You know, every city in the world is the competitor. And you win competitions by differentiation, not by similarity. And the more cities try to make themselves exactly like everything else, the less competitive they become for those places. So one is the kind of tangible representation of the differentiation of a city is in those historic buildings. The second piece of that that has both kind of, well, you might call it on the soft side, kind of sociological, but also has a real economic meaning is, and Tulsa is a perfect example of that. It's not just that there's some buildings were built in 1925. It was those buildings represent the character, the nature, the quality, the priorities, the importance that the citizens of Tulsa and its workers and its businesses represented. And that hasn't gone away. I mean, that same kind of things that are important were what was important in 1926. And so it is this continuity of the city, this ongoing representation of what those buildings meant. They weren't just four walls and a roof. They were buildings that had meaning. And those buildings are really the manifestation of the history, and that's what creates the connection between human beings and the physical fabric. And it's that connection and loyalty is maybe the wrong word, but kind of empathy with one city and connection to it that those buildings really represent.
Amanda, that gets a really interesting point of when it's appropriate to tear down an old building. You know, if you're going to put up a building with that sort of idea in mind, something that's going to, you know, it's a new headquarters of a new company, does that make more sense than just keeping an old building at times? You know, because that's a big question on how much do you preserve, how much do you let the city evolve?
It absolutely depends on the context and the building itself every time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to Don's point, it's great that we have a Costco now. That's wonderful. We have a Costco. Congratulations, Tulsa. But Costco is not what makes Tulsa, Tulsa. Kane's Ballroom is what makes Tulsa, Tulsa. We've been saying for years that tangible link between our past and where we are now, that is important. That doesn't mean there's not room for new development. I'm a big fan of new development when it's done well. It needs to be done well, but it's the old stuff that gives us our identity and our character.
Yeah.
I have a slightly different answer than that.
Okay.
I grew up in Western South Dakota, and my dad in part was in the cattle business, so I apologize for the analogy, but it's the best I can come up with. When you're in the cattle business and you add a new bull or a registered cow, it doesn't have to be the best in the herd, but it needs to be better than the average of the herd, or nothing can happen.
Yes.
But the quality of the herd goes down. And conversely, when you cull out animals in October in South Dakota, you don't get rid of the best ones, you get rid of the worst ones. That's how we ought to think about our cities. It's not that every new building has to be the best one in town, but it ought to be better than the average, or we're doing nothing but reducing the quality. And conversely, when we get rid of something, sure, we get rid of stuff, but it shouldn't be the best stuff. It should be the crappy stuff we get rid of, or we're going to reduce the quality of the overall physical character.
No,
I'm stealing that.
Yeah.
I absolutely love that. But that's something that TFA has been a strong advocate of as well, is when you're going to build something new, it needs to be better than what was already there.
Now, getting back to that idea that you were talking about of cities need to differentiate themselves and what people look for is distinctive, you know, practically every major American city has this same area in their footprint somewhere. And I'm thinking of here in Tulsa, it's South Tulsa. It used to be North Dallas. It's probably more like McKinney or you know, somewhere further out in Dallas. It's the eastern part of Memphis. I mean, every city has these same spots. They look the same. It doesn't matter where you are. And really, it's that sort of the heart and core of the city that is older that provides its distinctiveness.
Well, that's right. And the other thing about what you're describing, and I don't mean that we shouldn't have them. I mean, there's some functions that got to have concrete block, stupid, ugly buildings. But not only are they not distinctive, but environmentally they're not long-lasting. I mean, those buildings, literally, they were built to last as long as the 20-year mortgage and then get rid of them. Well, that's not how we ought to think about our cities.
Now, let's talk about the impact here in Tulsa of the historic, because you did look at that separately. I think there's been 18 buildings that have been rehabilitated using the tax credits. What's been the impact of that?
The ones that are finished and certified and all the way through the process.
Yeah.
And we have a lot more that are in process now.
How many are in process at this point?
I can think of a number of them right off the top of my head, and there are others that, for example, didn't make it into the study because the study was focused on everything that is certified, meaning it's complete and all the paperwork's done, the whole deal is done. But for example, 36 degrees north, the Universal Ford Building, where our reception is going to be this evening, that is a fantastic building that sat there empty for many years, a very large building in the Brady District on the corner of Cameron and Maine that is done, but it's not certified yet. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot that are pretty much completed and not all the way through the end of the paperwork process. But there are others that are still hanging in the breeze, like the Tulsa Club. Mm-hmm. So we've got all ends of the spectrum there.
So out of, and I was looking at the number, it's like about $238 million impact on the economy. That's practically half of the credit's worth, even though we only have about a third of the projects. Why is that?
The higher per project size. So it's a larger share. I mean, it's a smaller share in terms of numbers of projects, but in terms of investments. It's interesting this nickels and dimes difference in terms of dollars between Oklahoma City and Tulsa, although Oklahoma City has a larger number of projects per se because of the larger average size here gets the number, so it's a toss-up between Tulsa and Oklahoma City.
So is that because of big projects like Mayo and the Mayo Hotel and Phil Tower?
That was a $44 million project.
Yeah.
That's what it takes to bring a building of that scale back into productive use. That's why we need this incentive to bridge that gap and make it financially feasible.
Now, what are you hearing from the legislature? Last I heard it, and this was a couple of weeks ago, and of course in this particular legislative year, everything's up for grabs until the legislature is adjourned. But I was hearing that of the tax credits, this particular one might be one that's not being looked at this session. What is your sense?
Oh, it's been looked at numerous times. There have been a number of bills introduced that would trim the credit or sunset the credit or get rid of it altogether or put it on hold for a while we sort it all out, et cetera.
But
none
as
of those
this...
bills have survived. None of those bills have survived thus far. And we've got 2 weeks left in the session, so we'll see. We're keeping a very close eye on it. Right now, there's nothing active that will negatively impact the historic tax credit, and I'm hoping in future years, since we'll have this study, and we'll also have the new incentive review committee, which I think is a good thing to take a look at all of our incentives and make sure that they're doing what they're supposed to do, which is exactly why we did this study.
Explain the incentive review committee.
That's something at the state level that has been constructed over the past year to take a hard look at every single incentive that the state provides to make sure that this credit or that form of relief or whatever incentive provided by the state is doing exactly what its enabling legislation intended it to do, and that it provides a return on investment to the state, that it makes good sense, that it's fiscally responsible. So at some point in the next 5 years, this credit will be reviewed, and handily, we already have a nice template for them to start with.
Now, your study said that it's created about 3,000 jobs, and I assume that's 3,000 permanent jobs, correct?
Well, actually, though, interesting is we don't even count the permanent jobs. In that what is done is it's about 450 jobs a year every year over the last 15 years. It's been about 800 jobs a year over the last 8 years. And here is the reason. We do that is what we really know is those jobs that are created directly and indirectly when that project is being constructed. That we can track.
So that is the construction.
That's just
the revitalization
and cost. So, for example, you spend $40 million on a hotel, and there's X number of jobs created while that works. That doesn't even count the maid and the housekeeper and the desk clerk and the manager of the hotel. Those are all in addition. And the reason we take a very, very conservative approach on this, and others in other states have been much more aggressive, and so the numbers would even look larger than that. But we're very disciplined, saying we want to do what we can really argue that but for the tax credit, it would not have happened. So, for the sake of argument, if I'm a hotel developer and I say, oh, I can buy this empty hotel and rehab it and make it a hotel, or I can build a new, brand new building, in either event, I'm going to have, you know, seven housekeepers and 11 managers or whatever it is. And so we don't count those. They're there. There's no question that they're there. And this capital asset of this historic building generates those jobs in the long term. We haven't even counted those. So just in the work that's been done, it's been about 450 jobs a year.
Now, that was one of the criticisms I know that used to come out of Oklahoma City, was the type of jobs being created out of this historic preservation. But
yeah, that's a great question, because one of the things we did for the study is we looked at the about a dozen industrial categories, economic activity categories in the state of Oklahoma, and we calculated the numbers of jobs per $1 million of output for each of those activities, and the amount of paychecks that those jobs got. Well, there's a couple of categories where there is more numbers of jobs per million. For example, hotels have more jobs per million because you have to have a lot of people.
Yep.
And so that's one of the few that, in fact, is higher than historic rehabilitation. But when you then look at the other side, and that is the paychecks, well, those are mostly not very well-paid jobs. And so while they're high in the numbers, they're not high in the paychecks. There's a few things that are higher in the paychecks. But in this combination of how many jobs and how much those jobs are paid, historic preservation is near the top of the heap. And that's because they are mostly that work done in those buildings are mostly well-paid workers, particularly for those without advanced formal education. So you have lots of jobs because it's labor-intensive, and they're well-paid jobs. So it's a really strong economic development tool once again.
Yeah. Has there been any interest from the legislature this year in seeing this study? I know it's just being released, but is this is there much interest in seeing this study today? Given the situation at the legislature and the huge budget situations.
The economic crisis that we're currently in. Absolutely. I actually spoke to Senator Mazie last year and said, we're thinking about doing this study. And he said, you definitely should do that study. I would love to see that study. Make sure you include these 8 things. So the legislators I've spoken to have been very supportive and interested in seeing the results of the study.
Now, one thing I think would be very difficult to quantify in a study like this, but it's something that people would see anecdotally. When you walk around downtown, when you walk around even downtown Oklahoma City, where there's been a lot of historic preservation credits, all of a sudden, in places where you only saw the homeless and a few other people, now you're seeing people walking around. Is there a way to sort of statistically quantify how these projects have changed the character of a neighborhood and the flavor of a downtown district or an area where you've had historic preservation?
Well, it's a challenge, and because we were narrowly focused on the tax credits here, we didn't look at it. But I will give you at least some analogous approach. Is a couple of years our firm did a study for the U.S. National Trust for Historic Preservation on the catalytic impact of use of the federal tax credit. And it wasn't exactly counting faces on the street, but we looked at projects in three different states, in Maryland, in Utah, and in Georgia. And we looked in most cases at, so here's this tax credit project that happened in year X. And what was the activity in this immediate surrounding area in the 5 years before or the 8 years before and in the 5 or 8 years afterwards? And it was – sometimes we had to use different measurements from simple because of data availability in one place to another. But exactly what you described is what happened, is this tax credit project happened, and then somebody else made an investment. Might have been in another old building, might have been with or without the tax credit, might have been new construction, might have been more businesses opening up, might have been more business permits, might have been more a property value changes. There was a lot of different measures, but you have this as this trigger, this tax credit project, and you're absolutely right that it just rippled around its immediate area.
Donovan and Amanda, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks
for having us.
Amanda DeCourt is the executive director of the Tulsa Foundation for Architecture, and Donovan Ripkema is the principal of Place Economics, which conducted the TFA's study on the economic impact of the historic preservation tax credits. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWJS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.